And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 779. We're here to recap your week 22 fab, look ahead at some schedules, and much, much more. In order to help me do that, as usual, my co-host on the show, you can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tid, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing all right, Bubba. A little bit of a flu game for me tonight, but feeling much better than I did this morning. So hopefully, I'm probably going to sound a little nasally, but find a cold off in August, go figure. But after seeing Christian Javier left the game sick, Jeremy Pena had a sickness, I have the same thing, who knows. But this is week 22. We'll only have five more reviews after tonight. It's crazy.
Yeah, we're going to be looking at reviewing the season pretty soon and looking ahead to 2026 before you know it. And for those Patreon members out there at Bubba and the Bloom, Ben will be joining Ryan Bloomfield later this evening, Monday night, for a Patreon-only meatball kind of prep show. So that'll be very interesting to see what the boys have up their sleeve there, because I'll be tuning in to check that one out. So it's not just a flu game for Ben. Ben's got a doubleheader flu game. So really getting after it tonight.
Be making some tea for later.
There you go. Hey, I've been there, done that many a time. So no harm, no fouls. That was Ryan, actually. He's got the kids giving him sick all the time, too. So let's do a little bit of news and notes, because it was a rather busy news and notes weekend. Not in the good kind. We'll start with Zach Wheeler, who was put on the IL. He has a blood clot, or had, technically, after now, a blood clot around his shoulder region, the shoulder region that kind of pushed back a start, maybe had some velo declines, we'll see. But they had surgery on Monday to remove the blood clot, but pretty much everywhere you see Ben, he's out for a while, because you have to take blood thinners, you have to do a bunch of other things. I said he was a drop this week. They haven't made any timetable official, but if you're a Zach Wheeler manager, or just in general, what are your thoughts on this whole situation?
I do have Wheeler in one of my main events. I did not drop him. I didn't have to. I didn't feel like I didn't need to add a starter for his spot. But it does. Yeah, it doesn't sound good. At least he had the procedure to take care of it right away instead of just trying to take the thinners and hope it'll clear up. Because if it breaks off, this is more of an issue with elderly people. But it could cause a stroke, things like that, if it goes to the wrong parts of the body. So luckily, he's taken care of. Yeah, no timeline yet, which is unfortunate. But like I just mentioned at the start of the show, we have, including this week, there's 6 weeks of baseball left. And yeah, it's tough. IL, of course, you put him on the IL, Wheeler, and then there's got to be more of a timeline, I'm sure, by the end of this week and going into Sunday. So if you're like me and you held for a week, wait and see. But I'm definitely ready to drop him in that main event. I just want to hopefully get a more concrete timetable. These are so rare, the blood clots, that there's not really a precedent for a timeline to return. I think it was at the CBS podcast, they were comparing this to the NBA players that have gotten blood clots. I think one of the most notable is Chris Bosh. Mm-hmm. And then some other, I think they mentioned Lillard, somebody else had them in the past. But the problem with the NBA is that you're susceptible to getting cut by fingernails and stuff like that, more so than baseball. So if you're on blood thinners, then it could be a little messier, literally, if you get cut. But so it's a little bit more, I think, so it's not as severe for baseball, but they just want to make sure that it's cleared up. And so it could be end of the fantasy season for Wheeler, unfortunately. I just hope they tell us one way or the other come Sunday.
Yeah, I know Dr. Dave, I haven't heard his diagnosis just yet. we've got Dr. Chow, who is a football kind of injury expert. He said the surgery's good, that they got it done right now, but it's usually about a 2 to 3 month kind of timetable in this situation for that type of deal. I know Ariel Cohen tweeted out on Sunday, because Reuven Guy, MLB injury expert on Twitter, was talking to him, and he said basically you can't play with blood thinners, period, because it's not just if you get cut, it just could make you lightheaded. There's a million factors involved there. We have to wait and see. None of us are doctors, but it doesn't seem promising, to say the least. And hopefully he gets well, most importantly, because Wheeler's a beast, and it's awesome, and having another great season. But he's also getting old. So you mentioned that older people part. You're talking 70, 80-year-olds, but still in a pitching game, getting quite old. And they have not announced a pitcher to take his spot, because they're going to go six-man. That puts him back to five. And then you have Aaron Nola, so it's four. So we'll have to kind of see how that one takes place as things go along. All right, Kyle Stowers hits the IL with an oblique injury. Initial reports say grade one, but then the Marlins said he's going to miss multiple weeks, which is not a grade one. I hate to break it to anybody there. I said drop him, because if it's multiple weeks, let's just say three. That's half the season. Maybe rehab assignment. we're running out of time with Kyle Stowers. Where were you at on a player like Kyle Stowers?
Don't have him, which I guess was kind of unfortunate for my fantasy team because he's been such a good add this year, Stowers. Yeah, so multiple is definitely more than a couple, so that's three. So yeah, it's probably a drop because that's like half, at least half the season that's left. And if you get word back, you can always add him back, Stowers. It's just that it might be tough with limited fab left, so it stinks, but I think you do have to cut him. Of course, unless you have an IL spot, but I doubt at this point in the year that you can afford to put Stowers in an IL based on all the other injuries that have happened so far. So,
yep.
See ya.
Yep, I'm with you. Heriberto Hernandez seems to get even more playing time. He was locked in. Dane Meyers will probably get some run there if that does anything for your fantasy insights. Go for it. I don't mind Hernandez, but Dane Meyers, not so much. Pair of Rangers injuries. Kind of mentioned this in the news and notes on Patreon on Sunday. Felt like it was going this direction on Monday. Jake Berger was placed on the IL with a sprained ankle this time around, so it's not the oblique for once, which is a plus. Let me double check. I feel like it's his ankle, but now I'm just second guessing it might be his wrist. But he's going to be out for at least 2 to 3 weeks, which is obviously not ideal. It's his wrist. Sorry, it's a wrist sprain. I knew I messed that one up. He's going to be out for at least 2 to 3 weeks. It looks like maybe longer. He was already platooning with Telez. I've mentioned to drop him before. This locks in Rowdy Telez, if anybody still has hopes for that in fantasy, Ben. But any thoughts on Jake Berger's kind of just lost season in Texas?
It's unfortunate. I was warning about him the other day for next year, and he's probably going to go really late. He's kind of the guy that's probably like a one-year wonder because of his body type, and he has all those oblique injuries, Berger, now. So I don't know if we'll ever see him back to his true form, especially now if he was getting platooned for Rowdy Telez. I mean, you and I both have loved Rowdy in the past, but we both know that he's not. They're pretty similar built, and like their careers have kind of had similar paths so far. Like they kind of had promise, then had these big 30 plus homer years, and then they kind of fell apart afterwards. So kind of ironic that they're paired together now. But yeah, Berger's probably a drop because of how much time's left and the platooning.
His teammate Adelis Garcia, he hit the IL with an ankle sprain. Know that one for a fact. Over the weekend, he's had an up and down season. Had some hot stretches, had some really cold stretches as well. I was torn on Adelis. Like if you needed to drop him, I understood it. If you could hold him, I understood it because we don't have an exact timetable for Adelis Garcia. What are your thoughts on this injury? Because it locks Evan Carter into more playing time, which is a plus.
I'm a big fan of that. Yeah, I don't have Adelis in any fab leagues. I have him in a DC. So the different analysis for that. But yeah, I was thinking about this. If I had him, I wouldn't be afraid of dropping him because he only has 46 runs in the year. Adelis still only 16 homers, 64 RBIs. The 10 steals were nice, but the 224 average again it's a killer, especially when he plays every day. I don't think it's a long-term injury potentially, but yeah. If you're pressed for roster spots, he's probably been hurting you more than he's been helping you, Adelis. So I think it's okay to drop him. Even he was dropped in two of my mains, and those are 15. So that's saying a lot there.
Yeah, and with his limited time left in the season, like every roster spot's important for the bi-weekly roster builds, that just holding on to a guy right now gets really, really tricky. A little bit of non-injury related news. Nathaniel Lowe was surprisingly DFA'd by the Nats last week when Dylan Cruz returned. And on Sunday night, the Red Sox signed Nathaniel Lowe, which makes a ton of sense because they need first base help. Any interest in picking up a Nathaniel Lowe, who is widely available in fab leagues down the stretch?
Maybe as a backup corner, but other than that, though, he's been pretty disappointing as well this year, Nathaniel Lowe. His average is not what you were hoping for when you took him. He was kind of one of those late-round set-and-forget DC plays that wouldn't hurt you in most spots, but he's been hurting you. He has a worse average than Adelis, 216 for Nate Lowe. Not even stealing, which he sometimes would do. 16 homers is good for him, but not when you're hitting 216. So, and plus he's playing in Fenway. I don't know how much he'll be able to spray it off the monster, but the power for righties, if you're pulling it, is going to be tough to come by with how deep it is to right there. So definitely a much better lineup. And if he's playing all the time, which I'm assuming he would, he'll probably platoon though with Romy or Toro or both. So that'll cut into his playing time probably. So definitely he only in the 15s, or definitely AL only, but 15s and deeper, would I be somewhat interested in adding him back?
Agreed. I'm not running out in a 12 to go get Nathaniel Lowe unless, you know, lightning strikes his bat like it's the natural pretty soon, because I don't see a whole lot of production coming your way down the stretch, but anything can happen. Yordan Alvarez. This one makes me laugh because this is Astros Doctors 101. He took live batting practice in Florida, apparently had eight plate appearances. They flew him to Houston, looked at him there. Now he's going to start a rehab assignment on Tuesday, had the day off on Wednesday, hope to play back-to-back games Thursdays and Fridays, and potentially return to the beginning of next week. That's a lot of what-ifs with Yordan Alvarez, as we know. This is a lot of what-ifs, but I guess somehow positive news. Any thoughts on this? Because people have been holding it, and I've been saying drop for a long time. I think if you dropped early on, you're still fine with your drop. But if you've held him this long, you might get a little Yordan back in your life.
It seems like a quick turnaround to me for him to be back playing next week after being out for so long. I don't care how good he is. He definitely needs reps to get his timing back down and make sure that his hand feels good. Because, yeah, to your point, eight simulated at-bats isn't really a lot. He still has the rehab assignment, but it's Monday, so 6-7 days at the most. That's not a lot of time for him to get ready. And it's not like they're struggling, the Astros. They're still, I think they're leading the West without him and like two rotations worth of pitchers. But so I feel like they would want to take him or take their time with bringing him back. And yeah, so if you have Yordan, you got to be excited. You know, your team's probably not going to come back at this point because that's your first second round pick that was a big zero. So I doubt he's available anywhere, Yordan. I'm sure if he was added or dropped, he was probably added as a stash pretty quickly. So just got to hope that he comes back healthy.
Yep, I agree. I'm really looking forward to seeing. Like, I want him to come back and play, but I am still waiting for the next update where it's like, okay, setback or something, just because it's been so ridiculous with Yordan Alvarez so far. A couple other bits of news. Victor Scott to the IL with a ankle injury. He doesn't think it's going to be he thinks it's the minimum. Nathan Church was called up to play. They said they're going to play him a lot. We'll see. Anything of interest there? I've never been a Victor Scott guy to begin with, but I guess a lot of people are.
Yeah, well, I could have used him probably for the steals in my good main event, but he got 223, only 5 homers, 31 steals. There's not really a timeline, is there?
Nah, he's saying it's minor. Like the MRI showed no structural damage. He expects to be back within 10 days. Again, it's him saying that, though.
If you're desperate for steals, then maybe you hold on to him. But only in that scenario would. I think that's fine to do. Otherwise, just cut him.
All right. Then the Baltimore Orioles, this is more of a longer question here. They called up two prospects in Basalo, one of the top prospects in all of baseball. He was the DH on Sunday. They called up Dylan Beavers over the weekend. He got a couple games in the outfield. So what I want to ask you, Ben, is we'll talk Beavers later. He was picked up. Basalo wasn't available till next week, so that'll be a discussion point next week too. But with him in the lineup, and we'll see if they even play him because they are prospects and we know what the Orioles like to do. You have Mountcastle. Coby Mayo's getting the day off on Monday, so Mountcastle's playing first where he had been DHing the whole time. Tyler O'Neill is now swinging. We'll see how long that takes for him to get back. It's going to get crowded is my point. Someone in the Discord asked, is Mountcastle even a hold or a start right now? I said yes, Mayo should be the odd man out, but then again, the Orioles have nothing to lose. Where do you sit on this whole mess of a situation?
I wouldn't even try to want to guess. I would probably want to wait and see. I did add Mountcastle for a little bit in my 12-team home league, and he was doing pretty well when he came off the IL. Has Mayo been okay since... He has not been okay.
He's not. You can look at the numbers. I don't think it's very
good. He's at a 200 average. Yeah. 5 homers, 150 at bats. Yeah, he struggled a little bit for sure. The Orioles aren't really playing for anything, though. It's crazy how they traded all these guys and now they're just as crowded as they were before. I guess the easy way out is that Carlson stops playing and that way O'Neill can play. But why? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know who's more valuable to play, Mountcastle or O'Neill. But if they're calling up Basayo, I'm sure that him and Ali will be switching between DH and catcher, kind of like Edgar Caro and Kyle Teal are doing for the White Sox. Would one of them play first base potentially? Is Basayo capable of playing first?
I don't think so. I think it's Mount Castle's world there, I think.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I don't want to say one way or the other what I think is going to happen, because who knows? It's got to wait and see what happens this week, I think. And even at that, it could be like an even split throughout the week of Mount Castle and Mayo bouncing back between first and the bench. And at that point, then you really don't know what to do.
Yeah, so bottom line is keep a close eye on what's going on this week. I'm team Mount Castle because I picked them up a week or so ago and I've been enjoying it like you have. So I'm praying that continues to take place. But in reality, the Orioles have no need to play him. They want to play their youngsters. And real baseball-wise, it's totally understandable. Fantasy-wise, not cool. So we'll have to kind of see how that plays out over the coming week. All right, Ben, let's take a look at your rest of season schedule grid. We took a peek at it last week. We'll see how things updated this week as you put things along here. And I have the player lookup page out. But real quick for the listeners, give them a quick rundown again what we're looking at here.
Yeah, so Bubba and I are looking at a sheet that has all of the starters over the next 4 weeks split out by lefty versus righty, and then it's looking at their opponents or their projected opponents per RotoWire's pitching grid, what their WRC plus has been over the last 30 days versus their handedness. There's also a team lookup, so you can look at teams in general, overall opponents, or by righties and lefties. But we're looking at individual players and how their opponents have done versus their handedness. So last week, I'll start off with this. We were talking about Mitchell Parker, and he remains at the top of the list for all pitchers with the best opponent WRC plus against, best in terms of the weakest, and that's 76. So I sat him this week versus the Phillies where I had him in my DCs, but after this, I'll probably be looking to play him, I think, finally.
Yeah, I'm glad I thought about you on Sunday when he was just getting torched when I was making bacon and eggs for my daughter. It was a rough go, but then Aaron Nola went and got torched, so it kind of just played itself out. But to your point, you look at the numbers, like, yeah, he rates out great. He's got the Miami, the Pittsburgh, Tampa, Miami, Philadelphia. Like, the first four matchups on this sheet are really juicy versus lefties. So, yeah, streamability, deeper leagues, I could see it. I did want to highlight Sean Manaea, who has been on the struggle bus of late. He gets a little bump coming up here. The two Philly starts over the five games is not ideal, but Miami, Cincinnati, Washington, Cincy is in Great American. So that's not great. But, yeah, a pretty good maybe bounce back finish to the season for Sean Manaea, if that's something you're into. I like J.P. Sears on this list because he looks like he'll probably take the spot of Michael King. And J.P. Sears is widely available, Ben. How much of this are you taking into account if you're looking into FAD coming up?
I thought about – well, I think I had Sears in a list yesterday. I don't think I got him, but just for the fact that there was a chance that he would get called up. It seems like he would be the guy in San Diego now that King's injured again. And, yeah, now I think the big part is that he's out of Sacramento, Sears, and he's back – well, he's now in Petco, which is a much better pitcher's park, and – unfortunately, your Giants have been pretty bad versus lefties. I think that's really what's driving this placement here on the list. And of course, the Twins they gutted their lineup, so they're going to be a pretty favorable target too. And that's two of the three. I'd probably avoid the Mariners, even though it's in Seattle, if I could. But yeah, definitely. And the thing though too is that he's only listed for three games here, whereas Manaea and Parker have five. So I'm assuming that's probably because on the back end, without looking, that King would be coming back, so Sears would be pitching this week and probably next week, the week after. Maybe a two-step in there at some point, but could be a short-term thing for him, depending on what happens with King. It didn't sound serious for him, though, but if it's not – so if Sears can make these starts, he's definitely interesting. I don't know if I'd do 12s, though. 15s, yes, but because he hasn't been that good at all, really, this year, Sears. He was granted the ballpark hurt in Sacramento, but even, like, the swing strike rate wasn't that good, I don't believe, when he was pitching, so – it's a risky stream, but it could work out.
Yep, I agree as well. This one is very interesting because I don't know if the Guardians have made this official yet. Maybe they have. It's why it showed up on the list. But Parker Messick is a 24-year-old prospect in their system. If he finishes the season in the Guardians rotation, he's got the fourth best lefty set of matchups here, Ben, with the Royals, Rays, D-backs, Boston. Those D-backs, Boston's not ideal, and Tampa. So the two Tampas, Kansas City starts. When you look at Messick so far this season at AAA, he's made 20 starts as a 3.47 ERA with a 18.8% K to walk. That name stands out to me big time when I look at this list.
Yeah, I looked earlier and I had no idea who this guy was. I was like, I didn't have time to look him up, but now that I'm looking at his minor league stats now, he's actually pretty impressive with the strikeout rate. For his minor league career, actually pretty extensive minor league career, 70 starts in the minors. He has a 420 strikeouts versus 354 innings. That's a very good ratio. Not terribly wild. The walk rate looks okay. So yeah, I'm kind of intrigued. And now that I know who he is, I'd definitely be interested. Yeah, the Royals are nice. The Rays, at least the Rays are home. There's one away, one home. So yeah, Arizona's still kind of scary and the Red Sox are scary in Fenway. So maybe more of a daily type stream perhaps, but yeah, I'll be on the lookout for him though. Come Fab next week.
Yep. Definitely be interested now that he popped up here. Matthew Liberatore is back on the list. He had a two-step this week. I remember we talked about him last week. My biggest concern, I don't know if you've noticed it or not, because he's only going like four innings most starts. It's almost like they're limiting him now. And that's crushing some of my hopes and dreams here.
Yeah, well, at least a lot of the starts are on the – well, he's on the Cardinals, never mind. In Cincinnati isn't the best, in Seattle, at Tampa. At least he's home versus the A's, so that's one positive. Yeah, he to your point, until he starts – going deeper into games, it's hard to stream him when he's going four innings potentially, and they're not a very good four innings either. So, actually he was home versus the Rockies. That should have been a much easier start. I was kind of disappointed in that one in my DC. So, yeah, he's got to wait and see if he goes back to five innings. Otherwise, you kind of just have to pass and move on to the next guy.
Yep. Matthew Boyd checks out very well here, assuming – I don't think the Cubs are going to slow him down anytime soon, but outside of the Milwaukee start this week and then a Coors start, really good matchups for Boyd. Mackenzie Gore, we talked about him last week. He's on this list. He has three really good matchups coming up. And then he finishes with Chicago and the Yankees. Might be time to, we think we said last week, ditch him after that Pittsburgh start, but you got three good starts coming up here. Any other lefties, like you got Peterson, Rogers, Cortez, Sanchez, Lizardo, a lot of really good lefties on this list. Quintana's probably very streamable. Anybody else stand out to you as we're getting closer to the mid-90s and it's not as appealing?
Yeah, Rogers. So he was a talking point in the Discord today because of the two-step. I think I still ended up sitting him in the listener league because I was just – I'm fearing that the regression is going to come because this week he gets the Astros and the Red Sox and the one – and it's in Fenway. Then he gets the Padres. At least the Pirates and the Giants are favorable, but I think he's due for a bad start, Trevor Rogers. Yeah, this it's the same thing as last week. So we didn't mention it today, but so the average WRC plus versus lefties amongst all these matchups is 96.7 versus all the righties are 104.1. So definitely the league's still struggling more versus lefties, almost by 10 points. Now it was 10 last week, I think, and now it's kind of 8. So it's kind of closing the gap a little bit, but still definitely lean lefties if you're looking to add some pitchers.
Yes, keep leaning lefties for sure. Let's go to the righties, though. Luis Severino, still looking good once he returns from the IL. But I like seeing this must be because the A's have good matchups. Our boy Jack Perkins is second on the righty list here, Ben. It's an 88.8 opponents WRC+, but it's Cincinnati, given it's at home. Detroit at home, but then at the Angels, at the Twins, at the Cardinals. Some a relatively nice schedule coming down the stretch here for Jack Perkins.
It is. Even though Severino has the better matchups by a point, I definitely prefer Perkins because he has three away starts versus Severino's three home, and Severino only has four in this period. Perkins has five projected, so definitely liking Perkins. I think he was on the list last week as well, and I believe the A's have the best overall hitting, or yeah, they have the weakest lineups based on the last 30 days looking forward for the next 4 weeks. So it makes sense to see Severino and Perkins on here. I kind of wish I got him Perkins in some spots, but that's okay.
I have some Perkins in my world, but some others I wanted to take a peek at here. Like Brandon Young is on the list here. We just got to see if he sticks around for a while. Looked great almost in that no-no situation. I believe this is Tyler McGill of the of the New York Mets. So this was a question in the chat: would Tyler McGill take McClain's spot in the rotation? He could. I hope he takes Holmes. You never know. I got McClain a lot this week, so that's part of my thoughts. But McGill potentially has three starts left: Texas, at Cincy, at Detroit. Like, not the greatest, but still, it rates out fifth or on this list. That says a lot about righties, I think, more than anything. But does that interest you at all? We know how good he can be. Was pitching well before he got hurt. Rehabs are going well, but it's a good stretch of three games, but not a great stretch.
Agreed. Yeah, I had McGill in a couple spots start out the season, and despite the upside, he gets really wild, so the whip's always going to hurt you. So if you're looking for Ks, it makes more sense if your ratios are in really good spots to go after McGill if he's still available. I think he was added in one of my mains. He's available in my other 15s, I believe, still. Yeah, so Texas is like average versus righties, but I would still target them. They kind of got healthy, but there's, I don't know. I guess Simeon's kind of been on fire and Seager's been hitting better, but I don't think they're a tough matchup still, the Rangers. In Cincinnati, scary. But at Detroit, okay. They're actually the best matchup by WRC Plus for McGill. So, yeah, I would take a chance on him just because he has that upside. It's just I know from experience that the whip can really hurt. So, just got to be careful.
Definitely. Again, this shows you the testament of this right-handed situation. Adrian Hauser is next. Do with that what you wish. He's got Seattle, St. Louis, Cubs, White Sox, Nats. Like, White Sox and Nats actually have the best WRC pluses out of those five mentioned. The Cubs, the Cardinals, the worst. So do with that what you want here. But it's like Kirby's roster. Sheehan is a name that's been mentioned a lot. Ciccone, who I actually dropped in a few leagues recently, he's coming up on this list. But it's Tampa Bay doing the work for him. The other matchups aren't great. So to my point, and to your point, and we've been banging the drum on for a long time, target your lefties when you're streaming is what it comes down to. Any righties that stand out to you? Because I'm already at about 95-ish on this. It's like Joe Boyle. He's a drop for a lot of people right now. Schlittler was part of your discussion of Schlittler versus Rogers. He's on this list at 95 too, but it's not pretty.
Yeah. And with Schlittler, his good start is actually in Tampa, which is scary. I did play him in a league this week. Finally. Well, at least in my one main, I still haven't played him yet. I just wanted to add him to see what happens. And he's kind of been the same thing as McGill, Schlittler. A decent K upside, but the whip can be a killer in the ratio. So it's another thing, too, that I'm noticing is that they only have him projected for two more starts. And I think I heard on Waxman's pod they were talking about like Yarbrough coming back potentially. I don't know if they would take Schlittler out of the rotation for Yarbrough, even though Yarbrough kind of had a good stretch, but then he started getting bombed, then he got hurt. So maybe because of what he was hurt, that's why he started tailing off Yarbrough, but I think they kind of want to see what Schlittler can do the rest of the way out. So I think he's probably safe for now in the rotation, but definitely, and even though the Nationals have a 106, I think they're still a decent target for streaming.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And the thing with Yarbrough, he was actually much better out of the pen last year in shorter samples, even as an opener, potentially. Maybe he opens for Schlittler to limit his innings and vice versa. Who knows? There's ways to utilize Yarbrough, still get the max usage out of him. All right, we'll recap. We'll do this exercise again next week, see how things have changed with all the injuries and whatnot throughout baseball. But for now, Ben, let's look at the ad drops for the week. And for those keeping track at home, we focus on the NFBC OCs, 12-team leagues. We'll talk about 15s as well. But we'll get our thoughts here to see where things moved and shaked. And the most added player in OCs this week, 217 leagues, as high as 220, as low as $2. At least, oh my goodness, at least half of the league, or maybe about a third, closer to like two-fifths of the ads were over $100, which is impressive. And if you look at the main event, this individual was added in 38 leagues, as high as 172, as low as $12. And that is when Brian Abreu, Ben, as we know, Josh Hader, pretty much done for the year. The Astros haven't made that official. Josh Hader kind of made that official the other day. So I was going to take that one with a grain of salt. Brian Abreu looks to be the man. He's looked good all season. He's looked good most of his career. What are your thoughts on this one? Because I was all about it. I did not have anywhere near enough to spend hundreds of dollars on him, but I think he is a great ad for a 6-week run.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. He was probably the most desirable ad across all players this week, just because you're getting an elite a reliever as a closer for a good team. And he was probably widely available, especially in more shallower leagues. But he actually, I'm looking at my teams right now. He was actually added in my New Jersey main event way back on July 13th. So that manager made up pretty well by having him already for a buck. But yeah, it was kind of some bids in the main event were kind of, I think Fish had like one for 12. I heard someone saying there was some pretty low, even my listener league was only $9 for Abreu. So it's just, it's very, like, to your point, it's tough with how much fab is gone at this point in the season. But yeah, he's 84 Ks and 56 innings for Abreu, a 1.61 ERA, 1.05 whip. He, if we were to start the season now, he'd probably be a top, maybe top five closer. I don't know, just based on his talent. So it makes sense to scoop him up if you could.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's kind of the thing we've talked about often. It's kind of a shame this didn't take place a few weeks ago, because like I went heavy on Randy Rodriguez, not knowing the Giants would lose 14 out of 15. But like, I'd rather have Brian Abreu than the Randy Rodriguez. I think Randy's very good, but you know, it's one of those, you got to do what you got to do in the moment. But man, Abreu for a 6-week stretch on a really good Astros team seems pretty sweet right about now. So if you're able to scoop him up, I think I got to share it too. But nothing crazy. And I did hear that I believe it was John Posma had the two lowest winning bids in the main event. So, you know, one of the best players in all of baseball can get it. That's pretty great stuff as well. All right. The second most added player in NFBCOCs is Nolan McLain, picked up in 215 leagues, as high as 201, as low as a dollar. I was going hard after McLain. He's supposed to stick in the rotation for a while. Yes, McGill could derail that, which would be a shame, but when you look at the upside options on the market, there's not many. In his debut against the Mariners, McLain went 5 1/3, 2 hits, no runs, 4 walks, 8 Ks. Command will be a problem for McLain. That's always been a thing, but that seems to be a trend with young pitchers. Ben, where were you at on Nolan McLain this weekend, where he was also picked up in all 57 mains, as high as 207, as low as $7?
207, that's crazy that someone can have that much money left still.
That's the part that surprises me, yes.
Yeah, not 57 leagues. It's the 207. I did have bids in for McLain on all my 15 teamers. I don't think I got him anywhere. I don't think I got this other guy either, but I was prioritizing Javier ahead of McLain, mainly because Javier has, we've seen that he has succeeded in the majors before, and he had and I wasn't worried about the shortened outing for Javier yesterday or whatever it was, because he was sick. I think I mentioned at the start of the show, me and him have the same sickness, but, McLain, yeah. The one thing, you mentioned the walks. He had 4 in his debut, so that was kind of scary, even though he had 8 strikeouts. The minors, definitely, he had 94 walks and 226 innings for his career. The whip, because of that, was a little high, 119. You kind of would hope he would be a little more dominant in the whip and in the minors with the K upside that he has. Actually, it's not even that high. He had 245 strikeouts and 226 innings, so not much more than a K per inning. But a very good ERA, and he got off to a great start. I don't think we I don't know if we saw him on the sheet, so I'm intrigued to see what McLean's schedule looks like.
I'm guessing if you look at Trevor McGill's schedule, or Tyler McGill, I mean, you'll get similar outcomes, because I'm guessing the sheet has him taking McLean's spot, would be my hunch.
Probably, yeah. So most pitchers have 4 or 5 starts, some have 6. Rogers had 3, McLean has 2. And of course, McLain gets the Phillies and the Braves. So
beautiful.
He gets the short and the stick. So, yeah, not the best matchups potentially. They did DFA, they being the Mets. They DFA'd
Paul Blackburn.
Yep. Thank you. Let me look at the rotation right now. I figured he was safe.
Clay Holmes. Get rid of Clay Holmes. It's very simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that is the obvious move to make if you want to keep McLain up. But I guess McGill could go to the pen, but I think he's pitching like a starter in the minor, so yeah. I'm assuming that he'd go back to the rotation. So, yeah.
I could see 6-man. They've wanted to do 6-man all year with Senga, and someone always gets hurt, so I could see that as
true.
Well.
True. Yeah, they did want to do that at the start of the season. So, yeah, I thought McLain would be safe, but who knows. But if you added him, I wouldn't be too worried yet. I think there's definitely an avenue for him to stay in the rotation for the rest of the season.
If he gives me 2 or 3 more starts, that's half the season. I'll take it and move on. That's where I'm at right about now. That's why I was a little more aggressive, I guess, in terms of how much money I had compared to usual with rookies. I am not the most rookie pitcher ad type guy, but I was in on him and Waldrop everywhere I could this weekend. Speaking of Waldrip, Hurston Waldrip was picked up at 164 OCs, as high as 101, as low as a dollar. When it came to the main events, he was picked up in all of one league for as high as 101 because he was rostered everywhere else, as he should have been, in a 15. Waldrip's been outstanding, and I think we talked about it last week where I was kind of like tepid because I didn't know if he's in the rotation. Then afterwards, like, oh, there's an injury, or they got rid of Carrasco. Waldrip's in, good to go for now. He's gone 17 2/3 in his three starts, been two earned runs, five walks, 17 Ks. He's looked outstanding. So what are your thoughts on Hurston Waldrip, who I actually liked more than McLean?
Oh, wow. I think I had Waldrip's third where he was available. But, yeah, I definitely like him too. Yeah, underlying numbers, Waldrip has a 22.7 K minus walk over the last 3 weeks, or which I think is like all the starts. So that's really impressive. Good swing strike rate. He has gotten lucky with the BABIP in the left on base, 214 BABIP against 89 left on base. And that explains why he has a 102 ERA so far in 17 innings. It's going to be a little luck, but the K and the walk ratio is really good. And the Braves have been getting kind of hot lately, ironically. So the win potential is there. He has three wins and actually two starts. The one he was a follower, looks he's, like he got the win there. Yep. So three wins in three games. That's awesome for Waldrip. He could be a pretty big addition down the stretch here. And I'm going to pull up his schedule because I'm curious now. So for the next, he's below 100 average WRC plus. He has the Cubs, the White Sox, the Cubs again, and then the Marlins. That could be pretty good if the Cubs stay cold, but I'm waiting for them to kind of catch fire. So maybe a good 2 out of 4. Even ironically enough, the White Sox and the Marlins have WRC plus is over 100 out of the four starts, and the Cubs are below 100. But I don't think that's gonna. You can expect it to stick going forward. I think it's a pretty good matchups for Waldrip, and he's probably a must start going forward for now.
Yeah, I was trying to force him into every lineup, no matter if I had two steps and whatnot. I love what the kid's doing. And you got to imagine that Marlins number we saw now without Stowers should go the opposite direction, one might think. So good stretch to finish the season for Hurston Waldrip. Christian Javier, who you were talking about earlier, picked up in 149 OCs, as high as 77, as low as a dollar. So he's still available this week in some leagues. That goes to show you. He was picked up in all 57 main events for as high as 67, as low as $2. Maybe some people were scared because they saw the three innings bin. You know it. I knew it. A lot of people knew it. He left because of the illness. They compared it to Jeremy Pena, as you've mentioned a few times on this show. So Javier is in the rotation. I'm still slightly concerned on what's taking place with this rotation because Luis Garcia should be back any day. Lance McCullers might be back next week. There's a lot of moving parties. Alexander has pitched well enough to deserve to stay in the rotation, but he probably won't. A lot of moving parts there in Houston, Ben. But you were in on Javier. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I just think that he has that track record. And as lucky as the – or I don't know if lucky is the right word, but as fortunate as the Astros have gotten with their replacement pitchers this season, I think they probably just want to have someone who's been there, done that. Granted, they've had Brown and Valdez holding down the rotation all year for them. But to get Javier in there as a solid SP3, I think they really want that. And Arrigetti hasn't done anything to stick in the rotation. He could easily get kicked out if they have to make a crunch or there's a roster crunch for something. And so I think he's safe. And that on top of that, he has pretty good matchups going forward. The next 4 weeks, Angels, Braves, Orioles, Rangers for Javier. And it didn't seem like the command was an issue for him in his first couple games back. He only has two walks so far in the two outings, which is good. It's what you want to see coming up from Tommy John. So I think, I mean, there definitely could be a blow up here or there for Javier, but I think he is, I thought he was probably the safest going forward. That's why I prioritized him over the other guys we talked about so far.
Yeah, I could see the argument to be the safest going forward. I don't blame you for that. I still liked the upside of the rookies over Javier, but I get if you want the safety that you're going to get, hopefully, 4, 5, 6 starts down the stretch, then yeah, I can see that argument for sure. Miguel Andujar. Yes, this is August 18th, 2025. Miguel Andujar was picked up in 137 OCs, as high as 71, as low as a dollar. He was picked up in 7 mains, as high as 27, as low as $2. He joined the Reds on August 2nd via the trade deadline, hitting 359 with 3 homers and 9 RBIs, primarily DHing but playing some outfield, hitting fourth most of the time for the Reds. He's sitting on Monday night as Gavin Lux is getting some playing time, which is always good. The Reds are on the road this week, but you know they're probably going to be home next week. Vice versa, and the story goes on and on. Andahar's crushing it. Were you as excited as some of these other people were?
I wasn't. He was added in my last two 15s where he was available. A couple of them he'd been rostered for a while. I can't buy it because he's been so blah for so long, and it's just a hot stretch. And just the fact that the Reds would play him when they already have so many other players on the roster to begin with is kind of crazy for me. I guess having Strand in the minors helps. They DFA'd Fraley for this. I mean, I guess I would rather have Andujar than Fraley. The upside from Andujar is so low in my mind, though. So it's hard for me to say that he's going to be good the rest of the year. But he has 6 homers in the last 4 weeks, and he's hitting well over 300 in that time, probably close to like 350, which is crazy. So as long as he's taking fourth, you got to keep playing him. So I guess it's just the reactionary move, but I could very well see him going 3 for 22 this week and then 1 for 7. Well, maybe not 1 for 7. I mean, a little extreme, but I could see it ending pretty quickly though with him because he had some pretty good stretches earlier in the year, but he wasn't playing all the time. He's kind of stuck in the right-handed platoon, but if he's playing versus righties now, maybe it's a different story. Granted though, they did have a stretch of 3 lefties in the last 6 games. He did play versus 4 righties before that first lefty game, but he had sat versus righties before that too. So maybe it was just a hot stretch where he got into lineup every day, and maybe he's not going to be a full-time player. There's a chance based on how the playing time was over this last since basically all of August since he went there. But the way he's hitting, I guess you gotta have to add Andujar. I just don't think it's going to last very long.
It's a really interesting situation because I could see him struggling on the road. The power's been nice of late, but like he played, four months in Sacramento. Power really never showed up. So
he hasn't had power for a long time.
Yeah, I think it's a hot stretch. Ride it out while you can. I had like small bids in on him down the waterfalls, but I was not overly aggressive. We'll see if it bites me in the butt or not. But I think if anything, I'd rather pay, weirdly enough, I'd rather pay more going into Cincinnati next week than pay for what people did this week to go to Anaheim and somewhere else, if that makes sense. So we'll have to wait and see. Joey Ortiz picked up in 98 OCs, as high as 40, as low as $1, widely rostered in main events. Since August 1st, Ortiz hitting 357, 13 runs, 11 RBIs, 2 steals, 0 power, because that's what Joey Ortiz does, 0 power. But plays every day at shortstop, hitting for average. This offense, you want a piece of this offense, not to mention they play 8 games this week. Now we'll see. Game 2 of Monday got rained out, so we'll see if that turns into a doubleheader tomorrow or whatnot. But what are your thoughts on Joey Ortiz? Because I loved him going into the season. Really didn't do much, so I dropped him a lot of places. I've picked him up here and there lately if I need a batting average help, but the lack of power really deters me because if he's obviously not hitting for average, he's not doing much else.
He's not. Yeah. And as you're talking, it kind of clicked for me. I think it was just for the 5 game week, and that's why he was added. So, only 1 homer in the last 6 weeks for Ortiz. It's not going to cut it. And only 2 steals during that time, too. And I think he has 13 on the year now. No, he has 7 homers, 11 steals. Yeah. And you mentioned the average is killing you, and he's hitting low in the lineup. So he's not getting a ton of plate appearances. So I think it's just a stream for this week. And then I'm sure he'll get dropped in most spots after this, at least definitely in 12s and 15s, a little different, but there was even a stretch where I was playing Ernie Clement over him in my 1DC. Ortiz was just not really Clement's doing much.
Awesome. So yeah,
Ernie Clement is the man. So
yes, he is. Make sure you mention that to Bloom, top 11 round pick tonight.
Yeah. I'll slip him into his top 100 and see if he notices.
There you go. And I did notice the rain out on Monday night is part of a doubleheader on Tuesday between the Brewers and the Cubs. So you still might get your 8 games from Ortiz this week. Here's our Orioles prospect, because Samuel Basayo will be discussed next week. Dylan Beavers was added in 91 leagues, OCs as high as 100, as low as $1. He's added in 52 main events, almost all of them, for 155 max, $1. He hit safely. He had a 1 hit in each of his first 2 games, 2 runs scored. Nothing too crazy there. In the minors this year at AAA, over 94 games, Beavers hit 304 with 18 home runs and 23 steals. Very impressive numbers. Having a great season. how aggressive were you, or how interested were you in Beavers? I wasn't overly excited. I think there's going to be a learning curve here. Could be totally wrong. Like, I was more interested in like Colton Cowser were available than Dillon Beavers. But I could be totally wrong.
Yeah, I didn't make a bid for him, Beavers, anywhere. I don't think I was real heavily looking for outfielders either. But if I did, I didn't include him on my list. I didn't really know. I think I knew eventually that he was available, but I've said plenty of times that my rookie bias, and then also we kind of went through it with Vasayo earlier. It could get crowded in Baltimore once. Is O'Neill playing right now? I forget if he was in the lineup.
No, O'Neill's on the IL.
Yeah, so if he comes back, and then maybe Beavers goes back to the minor leagues because they love Carlson. Mountcastle is also an issue too, but even though I don't think there's an infielder that can play the outfield right now like they used to have with O'Hearn. So yeah, he's probably going to platoon Beavers, and it's just the learning curve as well is always tricky for the rookie. So I didn't really try to add him anywhere.
Yeah, there's another outfielder we'll talk about shortly, which I was more interested in. But first, Victor Vodnik was picked up in 88 leagues, as high as 67, as low as $1. Whenever you can get a Rockies closer, you do it. In main events, picked up in 39 leagues. Wait for it, Ben. As high as 203, as low as $3. The highest Christian Javier went for was $67, Ben. Can you wrap your head around the fact that someone spent 203 on Vodnik and wouldn't go 203 on Abreu anywhere on this?
They must have had the best starting pitching staff of all time then. I don't know.
Does Vodnik's brother play in this league or something? Yeah, because it was 203, and then after that was 51 and below.
Yeah. Who was the drop? Did they have
Zach Eflin? Zach Eflin. Oh,
okay. So maybe not.
The runner up bid, $1.
Oh my God. Imagine seeing
he wasted $202. Oh man.
Well, if they're spending that much now on Victor Vodnik, their team can't be that good.
They're pretty much gonzo.
Yeah. I'd even put a bid in for Vodnik when I was dropping Matan, which I told you about before we recorded. But when we get to our drops, I didn't even look to replace Matan with Vodnik. He has that 1.46 whip, Vodnik, and I'm good without that.
Yep. With you as well. All right, the outfielder I was more interested in than Dillon Beavers was Evan Carter, picked up in 76 OCs, as high as 58, as low as $1. I did get a few shares of Carter, which we'll discuss later. He was picked up in 23 main events, as high as 51, as low as $2. In the four games since returning from the IL, he's got 5 hits. He's hit safely in all four. He's got a home run, 3 runs scored, 3 RBIs, and a steal, doing Evan Carter things. He will platoon, but with Adelise on the IL, I like his playing time more. If that makes sense. That's why I was a little more interested in Evan Carter this time around. You've been an Evan Carter guy in the past. Were you back in on him this week?
I was. In my good main, I was trying to upgrade Alec Thomas with Carter, but someone bid like 50-something on him, and I did not have that much money, period, to spend on Carter. So I missed out. But, yeah, despite the platooning, I think he's been running like crazy this year, Carter. And the average has been okay, 250. I think he could definitely do a little bit better. But if the back's bothering him on and off, I guess it could be hard to hit for a good average consistently. So, but yeah, 13 steals in roughly a third of a year. It's a great pace. So I was definitely trying to add him back where I could. And even in 12s, he's a great streaming target. Who do the Rangers have? They have actually a 3 righty week to start the week out of 4 games. The one lefty is Noah Cameron when they play in the Royals, and then they have 2 rights in the weekend. So it's definitely enough playing time for Carter, where even in a 12, you're playing him and hoping for some steals.
Agreed. Another reliever I was more interested in than Victor Vodnik was Justin Topa. We talked about him last week. I really like the upside of Topa. Could have got him for free last week. He was picked up in 63 OCs, as high as 120, as low as $1 this week. In the main events, he was picked up in 9 leagues, as high as 47. He's made 7 appearances since the trade deadline. He has 2 saves, 8 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 1 walk, 8 Ks. He's been really, really good for the Twins. So I support this move wholeheartedly, and I'm still wondering about the Victor Vodnik love.
It's just funny how Topa had a save going into Fab last week, and I don't get why he wasn't added on all the spots. I mean, 12s are different, I guess, so that's probably my answer, but he's had a save the last 2 weeks, so I figured he wouldn't have been available in enough leagues to get added again this highly. So but I feel like it's been corrected now, and 120 is a little more than I would spend. Of course, it's by far the most. So if you have extra cash, it makes sense. But he's probably a solid RP3 for a 12 Topa.
Agreed. I want to mention Colby Thomas picked up in 55 OCs, as high as 37, as low as a dollar. But in main events, the third most added player at 54 leagues, as high as 35, as low as a dollar. Colby Thomas has hit safely in his last five games. He's got two home runs over his last two games. There's tons of power. He's hitting 255, three homers, 12 steals since he was called up, or three homers, 12 RBIs, two steals, sorry. But he's also striking out 44% of the time, Ben. So I love Colby Thomas. I love the appeal of Colby Thomas. I am terrified of Colby Thomas at the same time. Where do you stand on Colby Thomas? Again, third most added player in main events this week.
Yeah, he was someone I had. Actually, I had a handful of bids in, and then I kind of toned it back a little bit after doing some more digging. And the main thing for me is I did not realize that the K rate was that high, so I'm glad I don't think I got him anywhere, at least for a lot of money. But it was mainly because I don't know if he's going to be playing versus righties going forward. If listeners remember, he actually wasn't playing at all versus righties when he first got called up. His first start actually was versus a righty, but then he sat five games in a row when a righty was starting. He was only playing versus lefties. Actually, it was more than that. It was 12 games in a row he didn't face a righty, Colby Thomas. And then he finally played two in a row, Tuesday and Wednesday of last week. And then he sat Sunday versus a righty. So after seeing that usage, I was like, okay, well, maybe it's kind of fluky, even though he has pretty good power and steal totals so far. He has three homers and two steals and only 51 at-bats. I saw that, and I was like, okay. And he has a history of stealing in the minors, so I was interested in that as well. But I don't know if the playing time was going to be there. And I think the A's are on the road this week. So it was just a lot of question marks. So I agree with you where I like his appeal, but I don't think I can trust the playing time right now.
I agree. Like, I love the skills of him. I've written him up a lot this season for the A's. I think he's a long-term potential everyday outfielder for the A's. It wasn't just the strikeouts that we talked about. I agree completely. I looked at the strikeouts after the fact. It's the playing time that scared the crap out of me when it came to Colby Thomas, because they have a lot of guys out there. Do they just let him? They should just let him run with it. That makes the most sense, but time will tell on that one. And if I see him play more this week, I might be a little more aggressive because they go back to Sacramento next week, but I know a lot of other people will too. I'll have to pay the price for that. I want to pick up. I'm kind of going off the more added main event guys. I'm going to go back and forth here. So the seventh most added player, we talked about the top six in main events. Paul DeJong picked up in 35 leagues, as high as 19, as low as a dollar. I bring this up for people in 12s because Paul DeJong was only added in 10 OCs, as high as 16, as low as a buck. Over his last 13 games, since July 27th, when Paul DeJong was essentially placed back into everyday roles, either at all over the place, first, second, short, and third over the stretch, Paul DeJong has hit safely in 10 of 13 games, Ben. He's hitting 298, five home runs, two steals, striking out 17% of the time. Like, he's actually quite productive for the Washington Nationals, and he's hitting third or fourth every single day. Were you interested in Paul DeJong? Because I think he's going to have a lot of fantasy viability for the stretch run here. You're muted.
My bad. I thought I unmuted myself. Good. I did have DeJong in a bid list. I don't think I got him though. I don't get how he still does this. I feel like at some point every year he gets on a hot streak and he's fantasy useful. And he could just end the season that way, to your point. Five homers the last 3 weeks. It's pretty insane. He even has a steal on top of that too. He doesn't usually get. He has four steals this year. He tied his season high going back to 2020 already in like barely any playing time. It's kind of wild, but this is a very national thing to do for them to target someone like this and have him play all the time. Which I don't get why they would do this, but whatever. It's he has value for now. I don't know if it sticks. But I don't know who I trust more, him or Andujar. It's kind of, oh man, what do you think? Who would you rather have going forward?
I'd probably like DeJong just because at least I've seen him do it. I trust his power more than Miguel Andujar's.
Okay. Maybe if you need the power more, you go with DeJong. If you need the average more, you go with Andujar. Okay,
that's a fair statement. And Great American is quite the drug. So I get it. If people want to put Andujar above that, I wouldn't be opposed. It's very, very close to your point. Another player I want to mention here, Sean Armstrong of the Texas Rangers. Like, if you want to speculate on closers coming up here, he was added in 29 main events, as high as 75, as low as a dollar. Added in 26 OCs, 23 max, $1 runner low. But I want to bring this up because I actually, in my PT Tomorrow column for the AL West, it was right when Robert Garcia first started struggling before they traded for Maton. I mentioned Sean Armstrong was the dark horse guy to take over. Like, I love the skill set. I was very interested in him. Do I have any shares? No. But I just wanted to bring this up because since July 9th, he's allowed one earned run. One earned run over 17 innings pitched with 18 Ks and two walks. He picked up the save on Sunday, the first Rangers save in over a week with all of the blown saves. Got a hold on Friday. Not saying it's Armstrong's job, but I wouldn't be shocked if come next week when we talk, Ben, he's a much more popular addition.
That makes sense. His numbers on the year are actually slightly better in terms of ERA and WHIP than Matan's are now. Well, Maton had a couple of brutal outing stretch there. That didn't do any favors, but...
Look at that cable walk. It's beautiful.
Yeah. So I don't know if I even saw that Armstrong had the save when I dropped Maton. We'll get to those ad drops. So I guess it makes me feel better about dropping Maton, especially for who I got him for, and though who knows how successful I'll be with this ad. But it makes sense to spec if you've missed out on Abreu and, well, hopefully you chose not to go after Victor Vodnik. But yeah, so I would probably sign off on Armstrong more than Vodnik because I would
100%.
I'd rather have the not destruction that Armstrong should bring that Vodnik could provide. So yeah, so pretty good call on your part and your write-ups.
And a hat tip to the K to walk, 26.2% on the season, or I guess since July 9th when I was using the breakdown here, 3.3% walk rate near 30% K rate over that stretch. That is pretty impressive stuff there from Sean Armstrong. He also gets a nice 42% ground ball rate. So does a lot of good things there, to say the least. Any other players you'd like to talk about? I was kind of just digging there for people that are you on the Victor Robles? Let's start speculating before he threw a bat at a pitcher or after he threw a bat at a pitcher. I'm just kind of naming some guys to speculate on going forward for maybe guys in 12s where they'll be available.
I did consider adding Robles. I think I had him ahead of the guy who I ended up getting. Let me see what Robles went for. Let's see here. He's gone to my three main events, Robles. He was added for, so I think I must have taken him off my bid list because of who I added instead, which we'll get to. Yeah, I guess the uncertainty was just when he'd be back. I think they moved it up actually to next Monday on the NFBC page. I think it was looking like 2 weeks out, but they're thinking that because for Robles, it was 40, 50 at bats is what the Mariners wanted for him.
You got a factor in suspension now, probably.
Yeah, right. I don't get how you throw a bat in Triple A. Well, period, but then Triple A on top of it when you're trying to get back to the majors.
Who throws a shoe, honestly?
Yeah, come on. I get the ad. He could steal a ton, and I needed that in that one main event. I went a different direction, though, and it's just maybe you get him for 4 weeks now, and you have to stash him for a couple. There's still some question marks with Robles, and plus he has to come back and actually produce. He's missed so much of the year. He could just be cold to end the season, and he's kind of useless at that point.
Yep, totally agree with that. All right, let's look at our ad drops for the week, Ben. If you want to pull yours up, we'll get this party started and see how things worked out here.
All right, 1 second.
No problem.
All right, so New Jersey main event. What was that?
I was surprisingly quite active this week, so I'm curious what you did.
Mm. Yeah, for myself, I wasn't too crazy. I got beat out a lot of guys in this league. It's actually this main event. I had the most money in my four leagues, but only got $2 worth of players. I added Sean Burke, dropped Jake Fraley, 1-0. And this is sad. I added Riley Adams, dropped Austin Wells, 1-0. That's what happens when Wells doesn't play anymore.
I get it. I get it. I have a Wells drop this week as well, so I get it.
And I had been sitting him in a DC for Edgar Carroll for a while, Wells. He is not getting off my bench anytime soon.
Says a lot.
Yep. So here it is. So this was a little more of a – I actually did get Kobe Thomas. This is main event two. but this is my worst main event of the three. I got Kobe Thomas dropped Jake Fraley 3-3. Then I added Davis Martin, dropped Andrew Heaney 1-0. I added Brandon Young here, dropped Joey Cantillo 1-0. So it's a pretty cheap bid so far. All right, this is the interesting one. So I told you this kind of before we recorded, but the fact that I went and re-added Will Vass after dropping him last week, and I was dropping Phil Maton this week instead, it was just painful. But I got Will Vass back, dropped Phil Maton 24-3. So I missed out on the two Will Vass saves last week because I hate AJ Hinch and he lies and
he hates us too.
Yeah. I should have known better because he was to be on the Astros, and the Astros as a Yankee fan, it's not good. So I'm not surprised, but I have Vass back now. So I'm rolling with three relievers. It was worth getting Bednar, but I should have dropped Maton instead of Vass last week is basically the moral of the story. But I don't know. Maton had gotten a save and Vass hadn't. So that's all I could work with. And then here, so this is the other ad I was alluding to. I got Bryce Teodosio. I dropped Alec Thomas 2-1.
Nice.
I think I had Robles ahead of Teodosio at one point. I may have removed the bid because of the uncertainty. And Teodosio actually is hitting for average, which I wanted Thomas to do. And he's actually stealing, which I wanted Thomas to do. Granted, Thomas got a steal on Sunday, but that was like his first steal in 2 months. And
he's out of the lineup on Monday too, so.
Yeah, so I think Teodosio doesn't have a platoon issue because he's right-handed. He plays all the time batting. I don't care if he bats ninth because Thomas hits like seventh or eighth anyway. So I just figured it's a nice upgrade now. So go with that. And the listener league. So I got Javier here. I dropped Cantillo 8-4. I got Javier. And then I added Blaze Alexander. I know it's a week late, but just to have him as a backup, dropped Dalen Lyle 2-0.
Don't hate it. I did a Blaze drop, but I have a lot. I still kept some of them too. It's just
he still has value as long as he plays, especially yep. in 15s.
Is that all of your ad drops, sir?
Yep, I am done.
All right. First OC picked up Hurston Waldrop, dropped Tanner Bibee 27-14. So I dropped Bibee last week in some leagues, dropped him again here. Picked up Nolan McClain for 22, runner up with 21. Dropped Slade Ciccone, who's been average at best. Picked up Blake Perkins, who's hitting for average, power, and speed, plus the 8 games this week. Dropped J.J. Bleday 7-2. Beat Bubba OC. Picked up Adrian Del Castillo. Dropped Austin Wells 3-0. Picked up Blake Perkins. Dropped J.J. Bleday 3-2. Added Justin Topa. Dropped Devin Williams 2-1. That was a sad, sad moment. But 2-1 for Topa. I'll take that all day long. One of my 12 team standalones, picked up McClain, dropped Devin Williams 22-21. Picked up Jack Perkins, dropped Joe Boyle, who's been bad, 9-0. Picked up Jose Ferrer, dropped Slade Ciccone 7-5. Picked up Blake Perkins, dropped Otto Lopez 7-0. And picked up Nolan Gorman. Here's the one we talked about in the Discord a bit. Dropped Elliot Ramos 4-0. In a 12 team league, Ramos is nothing to me. In a 15, like we talked about in the chat, I get it, Ben. He has no power and speed at all right now. Hits for average a little bit still, but in a 12, I'll take my upside with the other boys.
To your point, I did sit him in my 15 all last week, though. So
yeah, it's been bad. Like, I'm rooting for him, obviously, but it's been bad. The 250 Vegas League, the Bubba and Loom Vegas League, picked up Brian Abreu, dropped Corbin Martin 34-29, picked up Nolan McClain, dropped Logan Allen 22-18, got Nolan Gorman, dropped Tommy Pham 2-0. And picked up Heriberto Hernandez. Dropped this is where I dropped Blaze because I needed no more infield help. I needed outfielders with injuries. 1-0 in that one. Bubba the Bloom Listener Auction League picked up Nolan McClain. Dropped Joey Cantillo 33-21. I had a lot of money in this league because everyone outbids me in this league. Picked up Cade Cavalli. Dropped Corbin Martin 22-11. Cavalli looked great in his last start. Picked up Evan Carter. Dropped Tommy Pham 7-0. Picked up Paul DeJong. Dropped Joey Loperfito 4-1. There's your DeJong share. And I picked up Jason Alexander, dropped Cole Sands 3-3. Man, Alexander's been good. I'm pretty much getting him for one start, it feels like. And then in my online auction, where I'm still trying to compete to get in the money, I had a ton of cash here somehow. I was shocked by the amount. I had $198 left. Didn't know how. Wow. So we went spending this week. I don't have much left after this. Well, I probably still have about $80 or so. I picked up Hurston Waldrop, dropped Phil Maton 56-11. No one wanted Waldrop, apparently, or no one had money. Picked up Nolan McClain, dropped Chris Paddock 44-32. So if you have a trend here, I have McClain and Waldrop in almost every league fab wise now. Picked up Evan Carter, dropped JJ Bleday 33-15. Then I picked up Adrian Del Castillo. I dropped Tyler Stevenson 6-0. I like Stevenson. Dude's been so banged up, and he's day-to-day right now. But to top it off, I was digging in on his numbers yesterday. It's been brutal, Ben. On the season, it's 226, 9 homers. Like, that's been bad enough, but just let's just say July 1st for fun. Since July 1st, dude's hitting 227 with 3 home runs, like 11 RBIs. It's not great. So I moved on from Stevenson in that league. Couldn't move on from him in DC's, unfortunately. All right. We have one listener question from the old Twitter, Ben. It is from Joe Biddle, a good NFBC player. He says, for Fab, should I spend most of my money on big fish like Bieber or Basayo, who will both be talked about plenty next week, because Bieber returns and makes his debut on Friday, Ben? Or should I continue to chip away at category points by strategically acquiring smaller targets with my remaining budget? How would you approach it? Go all in or keep attacking categories? I think I know your answer.
I try not to go all in. The only exception would be the closers, which I just spent a ton of money on for Bednar and Vest. But yeah, I'd rather have money left because I'm a little upset that I only have $16 left in that main event now, which is essentially $3 per week. So I'm going to be very frugal going forward. I have to be, but I'd rather have a little bit more money and kind of when those solid guys that I want to have, I wouldn't go all in because especially with Basayo, I who knows how he'll actually do as a rookie catcher. It's tough to bank on any sort of solid production with that. Who was the other guy? He said Bieber.
Bieber could legit could be
nothing.
Yeah.
I would try to avoid going too crazy for either one of those guys.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I'm still trying to attack the points. I went heavy where I had money to go heavy, if that makes sense. Like, there was one of my OCs there. I won 3 guys. I spent $7. So, like, it just depends on what you're looking for. PJ in the chat here says, you guys benching O'Hearn moving forward. He has sucked post-trade. He hasn't been great, and his playing time sucks. Like, I don't know why they traded for him to still play, like, Jose Iglesias and guys ahead of him. It makes zero sense at all. Padre Twitter's been up in a roar about it, actually. Any thoughts on O'Hearn? I think you bench O'Hearn for now.
Yes, well, I thought he was Gavin Sheets at first. I'm like, well, yeah, God, yeah, drop him. But Gavin Sheets, he hasn't played at all. So O'Hearn is the clone. I dropped Sheets a
couple weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, you got to. That trade really ruined it for him. But O'Hearn, yeah. Well, the problem with O'Hearn is that they faced 4 lefties the last six games, so that's why.
That'll hurt, yep.
So I'd maybe wait to see what happens this week, especially if it's a – well, you have to if it's a weekly league. But I'm assuming that O'Hearn will play as – I don't have it up anymore, but I want to look. See what the Padres have for matchups. They can't keep facing lefties. It's going to switch eventually, but
– yeah.
I gotta load up RotoWire. San Diego. Yeah, he should play at least 5 times this week. O'Hearn. So, well, the production's a different question, but I think the playing time will be there.
Yeah, I agree. Five righties in 7 games. It looks pretty sweet. He's got 3 to start the week, 2 to finish the week. They're gonna guys like Tang if he does make the start for the Giants. Roop, Verlander. Like, I like my chances in a few of those. And you have Glasnow and Yamamoto, maybe less than ideal, but also very gettable. So I could see that as well.
Yeah, and to his point, he hasn't hit that well, but
no, it's been bad.
Yeah, I mean, I was never really a big O'Hearn fan anyway, so I don't know if I would have rostered him in the first place. But
that's All Star Ryan O'Hearn, by the way. All Star Ryan O'Hearn.
Because there's a lot of idiot fans out there, Bubba.
I just had to throw that one in the mix real quick. All right, we'll wrap it up there, my friend. Any final thoughts before we head into week 22? The stretch run is upon us.
Yeah, it's getting tight with the budgets and stressing over start sit decisions. I was even asking in the Discord how everyone feels about Shota this week versus the Brewers. I ended up playing him because it showed it at the top, my SP3, actually probably my SP2 now in that league. But it's tough with the way some of these teams are hitting and how you're trying to preserve ratios. Nothing worse than getting blown up this late in the year and moving out of a cashing spot. But yeah, it's tough. That's why Roto's a great challenge. So that's why people also play head to head, because you don't worry about these things nearly as much. So yeah, it's we're getting down to the wire now, and only 5 more fabs is crazy.
It is crazy. I'm not I don't want the season to be over, but the idea of not having to run on Fab all the time might not be the worst thing in the world. For like a little break's always good, because you know I'm not gonna stop drafting or anything, but a little Fab break won't hurt anybody there. But appreciate you as always. If you're a Patreon member, you want to be a Patreon member, go to patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and you can check out Ben and Ryan about an hour and a half, actually, giving a little 2026 look ahead for the meatball draft coming up. So go check that out. But until next time, Ben will join me unless something happens with our schedules next week to recap the week 23 Fab and more. Look at some schedules. But until then, check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at BD Intric, and this was Benched with Bubba, episode 779. Catch y'all next time.